Welcome back to school. Can you all see and hear me from the back? It's getting to those numbers where I'm having to ask that question now. Can you also see the board? Okay. Can you see what I've written on the board? No, right? Exactly. Let's begin then. We have a lot to get through today. Right then, let's bring our palms together in the narration of the perfect one, the fully awakened one, the undefeated one, he who is our master, our guide, and our teacher, he who laid down the path for us to cross the ocean of samsara and to achieve the ultimate bliss of nirvana. It is to his name we make this veneration, and as we do so, let us also remind ourselves that this is a pledge of allegiance that we take to the Noble Triple Gem, which is our only refuge for now, for tomorrow, and till the end of time.
Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa.
I'm finding it increasingly difficult to teach you how to live a happy lay life. Because through the Dhamma, I see day in, day out, that the lives that many people live today, it doesn't lead them anywhere. It doesn't lead them to anything meaningful. Doesn't help them achieve anything substantial. Most people's lives are simply a rat race. I want all of you to be happy. If the Buddha wanted that, then maybe if that was the ocean, I'm just a drop in that ocean. But I want the same for all of you. But then I remind myself what my lay life used to be like. And I feel that most people's lay lives are not much different to them. There was a time when I used to attend a regular Dhamma sermon. It used to be on a Saturday. Before that, it used to be once a year I'd go to the temple and observe Siva. Once a year. Then it became once a month. And then it was weekly. But then the rest of the time, I continued to do what seemed to me like just meaningless tasks. You wake up, get dressed, get yourself to work. try another living. Put food on your plate. Feed the family. And somehow day turns to dust, dust turns to dawn. And the great road goes on. And then the day comes to an end. And then you hit bed. And you wake up again. You try and make some money while you're at it. You try and build property, buy property, build houses. You try and develop your business. You try and earn some skills. Earn yourself a good education and all that, but ultimately nothing really remains at the end of it. These castles that you build, they're castles that you build on the beach. All of them. Because when the tide comes in, it is all washed into the sea. So all that effort that you put in, and you know how much effort you have put into it so far, and you know how much effort you will continue to put into it. Just have a think about how your hair's going grey. Why your back hurts now. Why your knees hurt? How you have aged? How much of what you have done has been meaningful? If you earn some merits doing it, fair enough. Because that will take you, you will take with you when you go. But most people's lives are spent doing meaningless tasks. Things that don't really lead them to any level of happiness. It is merely pleasure that people experience. And pleasure, as you know, is simply relief from vexation, which is not really happiness at all. That's why I say I find it increasingly difficult to try and preach to you. Because I know for most of you, what you're doing is meaningless. And I don't say this out of spite. I say this because I do care. You are lives, aren't you? You are a life. It's a very precious thing. How much of what you have earned are you going to take with you when you go? The answer is no. But how much of what you had with you, you spent trying to earn? The answer is pretty much everything. How old are you now? That many years were spent trying to build the world around you that you live in today. You may be able to look back at what you have earned today. You will look at the family that you have today. You will look at the property that you have today. You will talk about your history, what you have achieved in life, all your certificates, all your accolades, all your achievements. But remember, we all came here empty-handed and we're all going to leave empty-handed. If you have served mankind, you will have earned some merits out of it, and that merits you can take with you. But none of the material possessions you have today, you can pack with you when you go. I respect you for putting your time and effort into this, because this you will take with you when you go. Your understanding of the Dhamma will guide you, to carry you forward, to take you where you go, to protect you. Dhammo have rakkati dhamma chari. Whatever Dhamma you understand is your only salvage, it is your only protection. It's your only savior. But most people's lives are spent watching TV, which gives you nothing. Listening to music, which gives you nothing. Reading the newspapers, which gives you nothing. Spending time with friends, which gives you nothing. It's like a line you draw in the water. At the end of it, there's nothing. But while you draw it, it looks like you've drawn a line in the water. Now you dip your finger into the water and draw a line. It looks like you've drawn something, but the moment you lift your finger up, it's gone. Isn't that what life is like for most people? I want you to enjoy and have the same happiness that I do. And I'm here scratching my head wondering how I can give it to you. I wish I could take all of you with me back to the monastery. So I could keep you there and give you the Dhamma every day so you'd understand it and you'd free yourself from suffering. But you won't come. I keep asking you, but you don't come. So then I wonder, what is it? Is it me? I mean, can't be, 150, 200 of you, it's probably me. What am I doing wrong, I wonder? Am I not convincing enough? Is the message not clear enough? I don't know. I think about this every day. Every Sunday after I finish the sermon, I think, like, how many of them actually got it? For how many people might these words have made a change in their lives? How many will now take the next step? I know duties and responsibilities bind some of you into a lay life. I understand that. You're bound by duty, you're bound by responsibility. You have children, some of you have young children and you have to look after them. Some of you have husbands who are not willing to let you go. Some of you have wives who are not willing to let you go. Some of you have work which depends on you, relies on you being there. But the thing is, when all is said and done, after all is said and done, none of those things will really matter. All the children that you have to look after, they cannot save you. In your last moments. Your children cannot save you, you know that, don't you? Although you have committed your lives wholly to your children. Parents, you know what I mean by this. Right from when your child came into this world, or even before that. When you conceived, from that moment on, you dedicated your life towards your children. And I'm not taking anything away from that. You have been a good mother, you have been a good father, which is great. But what happened to the children that you looked after in your previous birth? Did they come to save you today? Do they? Can they? No. Is this the first time you have become a mother? Is this the first time you've been a father? Well, what about your children from your previous lives? Where are they? It all amounts to nothing in the end. And the thing is, what you do for your children doesn't really earn you a lot of merits either. You're really paying your debts. The debts that you have owed them in samsara, you're clearing your debts off. That's what you're doing. The reason that you don't earn a lot of merits when you do for your children is because it's your children. There's a selfish motive in them. They earn lots of merits by doing things for you. That is true. Because to them, you are their parents. You have given them something that no one else could. But what you give them, anyone can. You have given them life, and therefore when they serve you, when they look after you, they earn lots of merits out of that. And therefore, you are special to them. But I just wonder, how many more years do you have left? You can probably count them on your 10 fingers. And then what's going to happen? You may have money in your bank account, but you can't take that with you. You may have land to your name, but you can't take that with you. It's only a name on a title deed, that's all, because it doesn't really belong to you. That's the truth. Nothing really belongs to you, you just think they belong to you. Not even the body that you're in belongs to you. This is only a temporary lease. It's because it doesn't belong to you. If you stop paying your rent, they kick you out. Don't they? The body that you're in, if you stop paying rent, kicks you out, right? Try not breathing for 30 seconds, 1 minute, 2 minutes, 3 minutes, see what happens. They'll kick you out. That's the rent that you have to pay. Try not feeding yourself for 3-4 days, they'll kick you out. So, how can you say it's truly yours? Nothing is truly yours. You only think it's yours. But here's the thing, when you think that something's yours, you commit yourself, you dedicate yourself towards that, and then you forget what you have come into this world for. You forget that your salvation has to be number one priority for you. I'm talking about a reality that is true for me. It cannot be any different for you, ladies and gentlemen. It cannot be any different for you. You are just as human as I am, aren't you? Or are you some special kind of human being to whom my concerns don't apply? Are the rules different for you? Does God somehow give you a get out of jail free card that He has not given me? With myself, I have to work for my salvation. How about yours? You get it served on a plate? Why do you think I wrote myself? Why do you think I became a monk? Why do you think I dedicated myself to the cause of my personal salvation? Because no one else was going to do it for me. Oh, how I wish I could delegate this. I can delegate my responsibility. Every other responsibility I can delegate. Wash the dogs, I can delegate that. Take the children to school, I can delegate that. Cook my meals, I can delegate that. I can delegate everything else except for one thing. I can't delegate my salvation. That only I can do. Have you delegated yours? Your salvation? Have you handed that over to your children and said, "Good, look after my salvation for me, will you? I'll feed you, I'll teach you, I'll look after you, I'll make a house for you, I'll give you property, I'll give you money, I'll give you all the inheritance. Just make sure that you look after my salvation for me." Anyone in this room who can dare say that you can do that? That's the thing. I'm asking you, the one thing that you're supposed to do for yourself, if you forget to do that, who's going to speak on your behalf? See, people walk into your lives. Like right from the day you're born to the day you die, people walk into your lives expecting to get things from you. Your mother, when she carried you, she wanted you to make her happy. That's why she was teasing you. That's why she squeezed your cheeks to try and get you to smile. Remember what she said? Say Amma, Papa. Say Amma. Say Amma. And when she's tried to get you to say Amma, imagine if you said Bawa. Do you think she'd be very happy? Do you? No, she wouldn't. See, even your mother, and you were only an infant. Even your mother wanted something out of you. That's what I mean. Right from the day you're born, people want things from you. You're like a service provider. So you're here to serve others. Serve others' needs and wants. Who's going to serve yours? The thing is this, you're in a trap. you think that as long as I am pleased, in other words, I experience pleasure, then all is well and all is good. But that is not so, because pleasure is merely the relief from vexation. You are beginning to understand that now. So now that you are beginning to understand this, you need to ask yourself a serious question. Whoa, if pleasure is merely the relief from vexation, and if I am not truly happy, and if all I have been doing is simply setting expectations on other people, just as they have been setting expectations on me, and I have not so far achieved real happiness, then who's going to work on my behalf? Who's going to work for them? That's what people forget. This is why I'm here to remind you of that. I'm here to remind you what no one reminds you of. Who's going to work on your behalf? Who's going to work for your salvation? Remember, that is the one thing you can't delegate. See, you're 60 years old today. When are you going to start to work towards your salvation? The last 60 years, nothing you did was for your salvation. Nothing. You might have been a teacher, you might have been a doctor, you might have been a lawyer, you might have been an engineer, you might have been a politician. So, that was the various guises with which you served other people's needs. They came up to you, they got service from you. So you were a service provider. Who's a teacher? Is a teacher a service provider? Who's a doctor? A service provider. So society wants you to become these people so that they can get something out of you. That's okay. I mean, you know, as citizens, as we live in society, we have duties and responsibilities towards others, and we serve our communities, and that's great. That's what I'm doing as well. I'm serving the community. But as I serve you, I'm serving myself here as well. I'm sharing with you the only thing that I want. I'm sharing with you the only thing that I want. I want Nibbana, and that's what I'm sharing with you. But that's not how you've been spending your lives. As a science teacher, you taught science. That's not the only thing that you wanted. You didn't want science, you wanted happiness. As a doctor, you spend many years going to med school, educating yourself, learning the skills, and treating others so that others could have a life that was physically fit. But that's not the one, that's not the thing that you wanted. You wanted mental happiness. These are all good things, yes, of course. We serve. But who's going to serve you? I need you to really start thinking about what you're going to do for yourselves. It's high time, ladies and gentlemen. Honestly, it is. Like I said a couple of weeks ago, 2-3 weeks ago, you know, one of our young Anagarikas passed away. And he was only, what, 32 years old? He was in his 30s. Everyone expected the oldest monk in the monastery to pass away. He's in his 70s. He's still fine. He's as fit as a fiddle. But how do we know whose turn it is today? You know, however many people lie in this room, one of you has to go first. That's always a given, isn't it? Whatever group we think of, whatever community we think of, there's always one of us who goes first. We tend to think that that's not me. We tend to think that. Then what if that is today? If that were today, just imagine if that were today, if you knew that that was going to be today, I ask you, what would be the point of going back home? What, to go pay your bills? What would be the point of going to the gym today, if today is your last day? What would be the point of going shopping today, if today is the last day? What would be the point of going to a party, if today was the last day? So then why do people do those things? Because it's not their last day, that's right. Once again, I'm not suggesting that as a, you should not go to the parties, you should not go shopping. I'm not suggesting that because you are still living your lay lives. So I cannot be suggesting that because I'd be crazy to suggest something like that. My question is, why are you still there? This seems unfair, I know. Because I know after I say all of these things, you still have to get back into your cars and go back home. I know. But I'm saying this in the hope that one day, maybe in a million years at least, you will remember, Swami Nuhansay said a million years ago, that I should consider an alternative life. And so today I'm going to set forth. Honestly, let me ask you this. You take a moment and think about this, and I'll be quiet for a second. Think of one thing you've done in your life that has been meaningful. What do I mean by meaningful? Something that will help you be happy. Honestly, unconditionally happy. You can't talk about pleasure, because pleasure is not the same thing as happiness. So you can't say, well, I went out, I love my ice cream, I love my music, I love my dancing, I love my movies. You can't give me any of those answers because that is not true happiness. It is simply relief from vexation. You understand that? So tell me one thing you have done that has actually gotten you closer to true happiness. Think of one thing if you can. You can't include the servants. If you ignore Sunday mornings, maybe the merits that you have done, besides that, what one thing can you say has been meaningful? Yours is a life, ladies and gentlemen. It's a life. It's not just any life. It's the only one you have. Your life is the only one you have. So what are your ambitions? What's the next goal that you want to achieve? You might have a few. What's the next goal you want to achieve? Start a new business? Get yourself a degree? Now that you have your undergrad, let's work towards a master's. Is that the next goal that you have? And then? What about the master's you got last time? So now you have your master's, have you worked towards your PhD? Permanent head damage? Then? And then what? Shall we set a goal to earn your next million? Would you like to become a millionaire? And then? And then? Would you like to work up to the next position in your company? And then? If all roads lead to a coffin, if all roads lead to a coffin, what, do you want to take the highway or the high street? Which one? So you'll ask me, Swaminathan, so what do you suggest we do? Right? Now that we are born, we have to live, we have to do something. We live in society, we live in the world, we live in a community, we have to do something, right? We can't just be looking up at the sky and just fumbling our thumbs and do nothing. No, I agree, I understand that. But is that what you should be doing? We have to be doing something, I agree, but is that what you should be doing? Did you actually come into this world to serve others? Or did you actually come into this world looking for happiness? You only serve others when it makes you happy. That's the thing. You have chosen to become whatever you have become today, your professions, and whatever you do day in, day out. It's because it makes you happy. So really, the ultimate goal behind everything you do is your happiness. Let's be honest. It's your happiness. Sometimes you might be happy pleasing others. That's also conditional happiness. It's not unconditional happiness. So there are some people who are like that. They like to see other people happy. So when others are happy, they are happy. That is not unconditional happiness. Then there are others who like to hurt other people. When others are hurt, they are happy. That's also unconditional happiness. That's also conditional happiness. It's not unconditional happiness. In the end, you're all lives, people, human lives. You know, in your last moment, I'll tell you what's going to happen. In your last moment, if you are to have a natural death, in your last moment, you will be on your bed. Right? If you can make it that far, you will be on your bed. And then you will be looking up at the ceiling. And you will start wondering, what have I really achieved in my life? That will come to you. You might have your certificates, your accolades, your trophies laid, right, put on the pedestal. Maybe it will be around the room, so that your children think that these things will make you happy, so they'll put it around the room so you can see them. Then they'll bring you some photo albums. Your children will think that these are the things that are going to make you happy. Maybe they'll put it on a slideshow somewhere, so you can look at all the photos of the past, right, so you can enjoy yourself, the trips that you went on, the parties that you had. What they don't realize is every time you look at that, you are left even more yearning and longing and desiring. It's only going to breed attachment in your mind. They don't realize that that's what they're doing. They think they're actually doing you a favor when they're actually not. Well, now it's time to go, but what they're doing is making it even more difficult for you to go. That's what they're doing. But they don't know. I mean, they're doing it harmlessly. They're being kind to you, but they don't know that that's what they're doing. And then you can ask yourself, right, I'm now 85. What have I really achieved in my life? You'll be left speechless. Because death is now on the horizon. And then you'll be thinking to yourself, right, I don't know, it's just going to be another few hours before I have to go. I'm going to be leaving all my children behind. I'm going to be leaving all my property behind. All these neighbors, relations, everything, everyone I'm going to be leaving behind. All the money that I have, it's all going to be left behind. So I earned all this and now I'm going to leave all of it behind. And then I have to start from scratch, back to square one. How many times do you want to do this again? How many times? Over and over and over and over. Don't you feel exhausted? The only reason you don't feel exhausted is because you can't remember your past lives. That's the only reason. The other day I was talking to our Swami Nansis and I was telling them, there's only one job in this world. If you do it right, you don't have to do it again. You know, if you are a good president, they'll make you president again. If you are a good teacher, they'll keep you in that job and they'll keep making you a teacher. If you are a good doctor, chances are you'll become a doctor again. Those jobs, if you are good at something, you can keep on doing it. But there's only one job in this world, if you do it right, you don't have to do it again. And that is the job of a monk. If you do that right, you don't have to do it again. If you do that wrong, that is the only time you'll have to do it again. So I look at you again. I'm sat here, I'm looking at you. You're sat there, you're looking at me. And we're looking at each other. And we're wondering what to do next. The thing is, we're both wondering what to do next. I don't like to think of you as lay people. I think that's my problem. I don't like to think of the fact that you have to go back home and you have to go back to doing, forgive me for saying this, but nonsensical things. Things that don't really get you anywhere. You're just going around in circles. It's like a dog chasing its own tail. You're just going around in circles. Today you're rich. In a few years' time again, you'll be poor. And then again you'll be rich. Today you have a house, and in a few years' time you won't have one. You'll have to start building one up from scratch again. Today you have children, and soon enough you lose them all, and then you have to start again. What one thing are you doing, ignoring the practice you're doing towards your salvation, what one thing are you doing that can actually be meaningful? All things are simply paths that lead you to a coffin. So, you know, that is a resting place for all of us, isn't it? at least for our bodies, not for the minds. The minds will carry on. We've all come into this world with nothing, not a penny to our name. Today you're a doctor, remember you weren't born a doctor, you won't die a doctor. You'll just be dead, that's all. Not a dead doctor, you'll just be dead. Today you're a teacher, you weren't born a teacher, you won't die a teacher, you'll just be dead. That's it. I'm not trying to just paint a grim picture for you and say you're all going to die, it's so gloomy. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying there's an inevitable thing that's going to happen to our lives. I'm looking at you and I'm asking you, are you doing what you need to do to step out of this never-ending cycle? It's a never-ending cycle, that's the problem, ladies and gentlemen. If this was the only time you had to do it, I'd let you do whatever you wanted to do and just, you know, be happy about that. But this is not. Today you have been born, you've taken these forms. You're either born a man, you're born a woman, whatever, right? And then as soon as your bodies break down, the minds will have to keep going, and then it finds another body, and then it just continues. As the Buddha says, just as a bird leaves its cage and flies to another cage, or a bird leaves its nest and flies to another nest, and then from there it leaves its nest and flies to another one. In just the same way, this mind, once it leaves the body, it goes finds another body, and then when it leaves that body, it goes finding another body, and then that's how the cycle continues. You think you're good looking today. You think you're pretty. You think you're beautiful. You think you're smart. You think you're handsome. Don't rate yourself so highly, because this is all very temporary. What if next time round you just get a handicapped body? What if next time round you end up in a disabled body? Then? Today you have all your limbs in place, you have all your digits, you have your head straight, you have the head over, you know, between your shoulders, and all that is good. But for how long? So what I'm trying to say is, I know I'm trying to say this, but I'm not actually saying it, I'm trying to say it. Because I don't know how far I can go. Because I don't know how far you can go, so therefore I don't know how far I can go. I need you to do more. I really need you to do more. Please. You and I, we don't have forever. Maybe today is our last time. That's the truth though. One day it's going to be the last time, isn't it? One day it's going to be the last time. And that could be today. Either be my last time or it will be your last time. Neither way it's the last time. Just like the Last Supper, there's going to be a Last Sermon. So while I have a chance to talk to you, I will be here to tell you, I need you to do more. I really need you to do more towards your salvation, because that you cannot delegate. The thing is this, with everything else, you don't tend to forget because other people want it from you. So they'll keep reminding you. If you don't pay the bills, trust, believe you me, people will come knocking on your door. If you don't feed your children, believe you me, they will keep pestering you. If they don't, they'll come from the child protection authority? They'll come reminding you, you have to feed your children. If you don't look after your wife, then don't you worry, she will keep reminding you, and if she doesn't, your in-laws will. Every time you don't fulfill your duties and responsibilities, the world around you will keep reminding you that you have to, or else, and they're willing to sue you. But there's one thing, if you don't do, no one else will care. That's where my job starts. That is what I feel my responsibility is, to remind you about the one thing that no one else does. And that is your salvation. You're all going to die. Don't forget that. You're all going to die. Today you are the king of your castle. Tomorrow, along with your castle, you will perish to the ground. And then people will tread over that. Like a castle never existed. Go to the cemetery and have a look once in a while. There are stray dogs. They take a pee on your grave. Stray dogs will one day piss on your grave. So what does it matter whether you're a king or a queen? Only everything you have achieved amount to nothing. Only your salvation. If you have worked towards your salvation, that's the only thing that will remain with you. The merits you have done and the kusala that you have done. I need you to do more, ladies and gentlemen. What I'm trying to say is really, I don't know what I'm trying to say. I think what I'm trying to say is Sunday mornings is not enough now. You've read Oliver Twist. Now he goes and asks for more. Yeah, now Swami asks for more. I'm asking for more. If there are those among you who can do more, then do more. Sunday mornings is not enough. I don't think it is enough. But I can't come on Saturday also. I can't come to where you are. So I suggest you come to where I am. Because where I am, there are a lot of people to look after you. Whereas if I come to you, there's only one of me. And 200 of you. If you come to where I am, there's one of you. And 500 of us. We can help you work towards your salvation. I sympathize with you. Oh, how I wish I could show you what I feel in my heart right now. Come with me. So I can save you from your misery. Why do you only let me treat you on Sundays? I don't charge you for it. It's free. So why do you only come to see me on Sundays? It's not enough. Because the rest of the time you're with the world out there. They don't know the first thing about this. They just want to get something out of you. You're like a tissue paper for them. Until they use you, they value you. After they have wiped their hands, you go in the trash. That's how people treat you. You know this. You are only valuable to your friends for as long as you have what they need. Let's not be naive about this. Let's be honest. Think about all the friends that forsake you. Who have forsaken you? They were there with you when you had. And then when you had none, when you had nothing, they left. What about the husband or the wife that you committed your life to? If you've been through a divorce, you know what I mean. Think about the years that you put into, years of your precious life that you put into that man's or that woman's life, and the investment that you made, the many meals that you cooked, the many times that you woke them up, the many beds that you made, how you were always there for them through thick and thin. in the good times and the bad times particularly, how you were there to look after them. But then when it was time to go, they left. Either they divorced you or they died. The same thing happens, right? Whether they divorce you or they die before you, ultimately, you are left alone. No difference. I mean, you should be able to say to your dying husband, "Hey, hello, mister. Don't you die on me. For the last 25 years, I've looked after you. I've cooked for you, I've cleaned for you, I've looked after your children, I've done this, that and the other. How dare you leave me now?" You should be able to say that to your husband. I'm not even talking about divorce. I'm talking about when time comes, he's got a cancer and he's going to go. Then, in the end, you're left alone. So all that 25 years of doing for him, what? Amounts to what? Now he's born and now he's with another wife. But every year, in memory of his name, you give alms to the temple. Whereas what's he doing right now? As we speak, he's getting on the poro with another woman. And you're still here mourning for your dead husband. Can you see the irony of this? What a joke samsara is. And the laugh is on you. So when you laugh, you're laughing at yourself. It's a funny thing, isn't it? But you still have a picture of it in your bedroom. There's a garland around it. Still in his memory, you transfer merits. It's all good. You give alms. You do all that. But now he's with another woman. You think he cares about you? Do you care about your wife from your past life? Did you think about her when you got married to this wife? How dare you? Do you know all the things that she did for you? Your wife from your past life? All the sacrifices she made on your behalf, and how you promised her that you'd always be faithful to her. Remember? No, you don't. That's the thing, right? So, this life, you found yourself another wife, and then now you don't even care what she did for you. See? It's like changing clothes. When you take off one, that goes into the washing, and you put another one on. Where's your gratitude to the old one? I'm not suggesting we change that. That's just the way it's going to be. What I'm asking you to do is think about who and what you are committing your life to. A lot of the things that people do in their lay lives are meaningless in this way. I live that life and therefore I'm entitled to speak in this way. I'm not looking at you in disdain. I'm just thinking about the life that I lived. And I know that that didn't amount to anything. It didn't give me any happiness. I wore a smile on my face, but that was only for pleasure. It was not true happiness. True happiness has to be unconditional, of course. So once again I ask you, are you doing enough? You need to work towards your salvation, ladies and gentlemen. Your education is not going to see you through. Some of the best minds, some of the best educated people, they die and then that's it for them for a long time. Education is not the answer to happiness. You need to educate yourself so that you can live a comfortable life, yes, but that's it. That road also leads to a coffin. If all roads lead to a coffin, then you need to ask yourself, which one do I choose? I'm also going to end up dead. But this life that I live, I want to live in a way that I don't have to revisit that coffin every single time I'm dead. This life will hopefully be my last, so that I'm not born again. So that I don't have to do these meaningless things again, over and over and over again. Life is precious. Life is valuable because we can do something useful with it. So keep your life safe. Look after yourselves so that you can do something meaningful with it. I'm very much pro-life. Very much so. That's why I think someone who goes and commits suicide is just silly. They haven't understood the value of life. How silly for people to do that, to even consider that. They don't realize the gift that they have. If you know someone who is considering that, bring them to me. Bring them to the monastery so that we can kick some sense into their heads. But then most of the time they don't say any of that. They just jump. They just go and drink the bottle. They just go and jump in front of a train. And the world finds out after the fact. They don't even have the merits for a Kalyan Mitra to show them an alternative. They don't even have the merits for that. What a pity. But if ever you hear someone, you know someone, you even get wind of someone wanting to do something like that, bring them to the monastery. If you can't bring them, you know, just tie their hands, like get them a white van and put them into it and bring them to the monastery or something. They just don't understand the value of their lives. I don't say these things to a dog because there's no point in talking to a dog about this. It's too late for the dog. But to human beings, I speak. Because human beings forget what they were born for. There's only one species in this world who doesn't do what they were born to do. Have you ever seen a dog go to school? No, because the dog wasn't born to go to school. So he doesn't. But you've seen human beings go to school, right? But a human being wasn't born to go to school. That's the thing. A human being was born to find true happiness. You have to go to school? Yes. But that's just to make life work. That's it. Not to be the be-all and end-all of life. So once again, I don't know how much of this is actually fair on you. That's what I'm saying. You probably need to find another monk now to continue these sermons. I don't know how to teach you to live a happy lay life because it's... it's not a jolly good word out there. People pretend it is. And when people post pictures of them on Facebook, right, and they pretend they're having a happy, wonderful, jolly good life. They never show you what's going on behind the scenes. When people get married, they only post those things, but people don't post having fights in a marriage on Facebook, do they? They don't do that. So a young woman, she sees, goes, sees her friends on Facebook, they're getting married, so must I. I must also get married, but she doesn't know that they're on the verge of divorce and they've only been married for 3 months. After that, they have to somehow make it work. Otherwise, all the stories that people will say, you're a victim of that after that. So, forgive me. You're not getting what you paid for. But I can't make up lies. I can't sugarcoat this for you. I have to lay it as it is. Because I want you to experience what I experienced today. Freedom from everything. The power to be free. I'm putting it in this way because I don't expect anything from you. The reason I don't expect anything from you, ladies and gentlemen, is because you don't have what I want. All I want is unconditional happiness and you don't have that. You don't have that to offer to me because it's not something that you can offer to me. It has to be born within me. That's why I'm at liberty to speak to you in this way and tell you the truth as it is. See, if I needed you to help me with something, then I'd have to be here to please you. I'd have to say things to make you happy. I'd have to tell you what a great person you are. And flatter you. Don't people flatter you all the time? And tell you how wonderful you are? And tell you how good looking you are? And how tell you how kind you are, and how gentle you are, and how so good you are, and how wonderful you are? People flatter you all the time. Don't be naive to accept everything they say, to believe everything they say. They'll keep flattering you because they want something out of you. People pump the well because they want water from it, that's why. Not because they love the pump, not because they love the well. They'll keep pumping you because they want something from you. I don't want anything from you. That's why I can lay it bare for you. That's why I don't care what you think about me. Because I care about you. That's why I don't care what you think about me. If I didn't care about you, I'd have to care about what you thought about me. If I didn't care about you, then I'd be caring about what you give me, what I can get from you. Then I'd have to be concerned about what you think about me, because if you're not happy with me, you won't give me what you have. So if I needed what was in your pocket, then I can't be talking to you like this. Oh no. Then I'd have to tell you how nice people you are. How you should continue doing the jobs that you're doing. Earn more money. And do something for the monastery. And here's me asking you to come and jump on ship. When you do that, you're going to have to leave your jobs anyway, behind anyway. Right? So then you can't be earning the money that you do to feed the monastery. I'm asking you to come on board. I'm asking you to join this mission. In a way, this is suicide. I'm cutting the hand that feeds. But that's okay because I don't care. I only care about one thing. I only care about salvation. I only care about happiness. Ultimate happiness, unconditional happiness. And for that I will speak. I will always speak for that. My words will not be filtered by selfish needs. Because I look at you and you look at me and I'm sat here thinking, when can I convince you to do more than what you're doing today? If you are bound by duty and responsibility, that I understand. But if duties and responsibilities are not keeping you behind, are not tying you back, then take this while it lasts. The Sri Sambuddha Sasana is not going to be here forever. We have just been so fortunate to come into this world while the Sasana exists and prevails. It's not going to be here forever. Buddhas don't come every day. They don't grow like mushrooms. They don't breed like rabbits. Buddhas don't come every day. We can only talk about a Buddha, we can even only utter the word a Buddha, because we have been so tremendously meritorious to be born in this auspicious era. That's why. Many eons have passed without even the word Buddha being heard. It's okay for us to do what we are doing day in, day out in a time where there is no Buddha because there is no alternative. So when there is no Buddha, it matters not what we do. Then let's go and educate ourselves. Let's get married not once, let's get married 100 times. Let's not have children. Let's have, I don't know, a litter of children. Let's just carry on doing that. Let's build houses. Let's go to the moon and let's go exploring. Let's do all these things while when there is no Buddha. because there's no alternative. But while there is a Buddha, while the Buddha's Dhamma prevails, I'm saying, do the right thing. Pick your battles. Otherwise you'll lose the war. Pick your battles. You're picking the wrong battles, I think. You're picking the domestic battle. Therefore you're losing the war. You're picking the battle at work. Therefore you're losing the war. Pick the right battle if you want to win the war. I have picked the battle against Raga, Dvesha and Moha. These are the reasons why you are still in a job. These are the reasons why you are still trying to make a living. These are the reasons why you are still hungry. You know, feeding yourself is not the answer to hunger. Do you know that? Feeding yourself is not the answer to hunger. Because tomorrow you'll be hungry again. Don't take this lightly. Go deep and try and understand in a profound sense what I mean here. Feeding yourself is not the answer to hunger because tomorrow you're going to be hungry. How many times have you fed yourself by now? For the last 50 years you've fed yourself. Are you not hungry again? This morning you were hungry. So feeding yourself is not the answer to hunger. For as long as you have a stomach, you're going to be hungry. So if hunger you want to be free from once and for all, then you have to find a way to get rid of a stomach. Otherwise you're going to have to constantly keep feeding yourself. You have to constantly keep cooking for yourself. If not, find a chef and feed them. And pay the guy to cook for you. You have to maintain these bodies. You have to wash yourselves every day. You have to clean yourselves every day. You have to build houses for yourselves every day. You have to dress yourselves. You have to feed yourselves. You're probably looking at me like, these are not problems, Swami. So why do you think these things are problems? Because you look at a mountain, you see a molehill. I look at a molehill and I see a mountain. That's why. You're looking at a mountain. You see the molehill. You think this is a problem? Eating is not a problem. Swami knows eating is not a problem. I cook something for myself. If not, I go to the restaurant and eat something or get a takeaway. How is that a big deal? For me, that's a problem. I see a mountain there, a mountain of a problem. And the reason you may not see the problem as big as I do is because you are surrounded by mountains. You have so many problems going on with your life. Having to feed yourself is nothing. Isn't it? To me, having to feed myself is a problem. Because there's no point in doing that. I fed myself yesterday also. Today also I have to come to you with my arms full. For me, that's a problem. Even the subtlest things are problems to me. I want to be free. I can't be, because I feel hunger. I'm not free. I see the pain in hunger. You see the pain in a failing economy. I see the pain in hunger. Because I have gone microscopic. I'm talking about existence is a problem. You think about paying the bills is a problem. You think the mortgage is a problem. I'm talking about existence being a problem. Are we on two levels? I don't know. So, come. I have the truth, let me set you free. If your life is too much of a burden, then come. Let me give you the answers. Set aside all the things that are not mandatory. Ask yourself, are these things that I do day in, day out, are they, do I have to do them or do I want to do them? If there are not things that you have to do, then put them to the side. Come forward. Step forward. Because now is the time. Now is the time. You may not get another time. I mean, you're all people. And you're all going to die. Am I the only one who's spotting that? You're all going to die. And then whatever you've done so far won't matter. Otherwise, don't die. If you haven't died, then live a life that is meaningful. So how do we live a meaningful life then? Life is meaningful when you spend it to achieve unconditional happiness. That's when life is meaningful. I will try my best to explain to you what unconditional happiness is. You try your best to understand what it is. Because once you have understood what unconditional happiness is, you won't be looking for happiness in other things. Perhaps the reason you are still bound to your lay lives is because you are still looking for a happiness that is dependent on what is put in front of your eyes. Therefore, you need a TV to be happy. Therefore, you still need your music to be happy. You still need your food to be happy. You still need your friends to be happy. You need a spouse to be happy. You need your makeup to be happy. You need to go to the party to be happy. But happiness is not in these things, because happiness is only to be found within. I'm going to try and help you understand that. Your being here is your willingness to accept that teaching. So, I'll try to explain that to you. You try to understand that. Because this is the truth. And nothing I say I want you to accept as at face value, because I want you to analyze this. I want you to ask yourselves questions. Does this make sense to me? Is what Swami Nuhansi is saying actually of meaning? Does it ring true for me? And in your lap of life, experiment and find out the answers. One of the things that people grapple with is birth, life and death. I'm going to try and explain to you what birth, life and death are. And the reason I try to explain this to you is because you think of birth, life and death in a very different way to how I think of it. Therefore, the concept of birth is something you are very much attached to. Life is something you are very much attached to. And death is something you don't want. That's why you always get into conflict with that. That's why death hurts you. What if I were to tell you that there is no such thing called death? But not because I say so. Right now it might be, Swami Nansi says, so it may be true. But I want to try and get you to understand what death really is. Because most of you will fear death. Maybe even all of you. All of you fear death. So therefore when I start talking about death, it's not a nice topic. People don't like death. Some people even apparently write in comments saying, why is he always talking about death? People don't like death. But it's the inevitable truth for everyone. If you can understand what death truly is, you won't have to fear it. People only fear things they don't understand. Isn't that so? People only fear things they don't understand. So if death is inevitably going to come to all of you, how about we understand what death is? And then you won't have to be afraid of it. What do you say? Right, let's try and understand what death is. What do you see here? A candle. It's a candle. Anything special about this candle? Well, it's just a standard candle, right? It's just a candle. Would you have any words to describe this candle? By which I mean, would you use any adjectives to describe this candle?
White
candle. Any others?
Melting.
A melting candle. Okay. Well, it hasn't started melting yet, but meltable.
Yes. Short candle.
Oh, you think that's short? Unlit. Unlit candle. So this is an unlit candle. It's an unlit, white, short candle. What's a long candle? I thought that was a long candle. Right, so that's a candle then. I have a lighter. What do you think I'm going to do now? I'm going to light the candle. Okay? What do we have now?
A burning
candle. A candle that is lit and a candle that is burning. Yeah? What do you have now?
Burnt out it.
Nice. A what candle? A burnt out candle. Either a blown out candle, you could say. Or a burnt out. A used candle. So, in the beginning, you had an unlit candle. Then you had a lit candle. Then you had a burnt out candle. So these are the three candles that you saw. What do you have now? What is it now? A burnt out candle. What's this? So this is an unlit candle, whereas this is a burnt out candle. Okay. Right. Now I have some questions to ask you. You're telling me that this is an unlit candle and you're telling me this is a burnt out candle. Why? What makes this burnt out? What makes this an unlit candle? Aren't they both just unlit? Yes. Aren't they both just unlit candles? Right now, neither of them are lit. But you tell me that this is a lit candle, this is an unlit candle, and you tell me that this is a burnt out candle. But if you look at it, they are in the same state. Neither of them are burning right now. Why do you think that this is a burnt out candle and this is an unlit candle when actually they're just the same? They're not lit, there's no fire here. But you say that one is an unlit candle and you say the other is a burnt out candle. The reason that you say that, yes, the reason that you say that is because you remember that this was lit earlier. Yeah, so earlier this was a light, and therefore now you say that this is a burnt out candle. You don't have the same memory about this candle. Just like this candle was before it was lit. Yes? But then? Yes. Exactly. Yeah. Because the wick is black. So if I'd been able to change the color of the wick and put it back to this, then you would not be able to tell the difference anyway. But this is a burnt out candle, whereas this is an unlit candle. But before I lit this up, this was also an unlit candle. So technically, all you have are candles that are lit and candles that are unlit. However, this somehow qualifies to be called a burnt out candle. And that is because you put this on a time dimension. This is put on a time dimension. And so is this, but this one, if you go back in time, you don't have any memory or any recollection of this being lit. The reason that this, you say, is a burnt out candle is because when you go back in time, you recall that this was a lit candle. But technically speaking, they're identical. Ignore the color of the wig, but technically speaking, they're identical because neither of them are lit. This becomes a burnt out candle because you're talking about this being on the dimension of time. You're talking about a past instance of this object and you're comparing it with now, and therefore you say that it was a burning candle before and now it is a burnt out candle. You do the same with this object. You put this also on the time dimension, but you don't have any recollection of something like that having happened, and therefore you say this is an unlit candle. Once again I tell you, they are identical. They are both unlit right now. In fact, if I were to light this candle as well, so that the wick goes black, then you won't be able to tell the difference between these two again. I could put it behind me, right, and juggle the two and bring it back out, you won't be able to tell which one was which. Let me light this candle again. And you tell me what I'm trying to do here, okay? Once again, you have a lit candle. This is fire. Observe and tell me what I'm trying to do here. What did I just do? I put out the fire. I killed the fire. How did I do that? By blowing at it, what did I do? I reduced the oxygen. Yeah. I reduced the amount of oxygen, and by reducing the amount of oxygen that was around this wick, you're telling me I put out the fire. That's what I did, right? By reducing the amount of oxygen in the atmosphere that surrounds this wick, I put out the fire. What is fire? fire is oxygen, the wick or the flammable object, and temperature. When these three causes come together, there's fire. When I blew at this wick, at this candle, did I take out the oxygen of the burning fire? See, just think about how you construct your sentences. Think about your perception of the world, as someone said, deluded perception. You're telling me that I put out the fire. So what you're saying is there was a fire, and that fire was burning because of the oxygen that was here. By blowing at this, you're telling me that I took out the oxygen that kept the fire burning. So there was a fire from which I took the oxygen, and therefore the fire went out. Is that what happened really? There was a fire that was burning, I took the oxygen out of the fire, and then the fire stopped. Is that what happened? That's not what happened, ladies and gentlemen. Because if there's a fire, I can't take out oxygen from this. Because a fire is oxygen being consumed. So from a fire, I can't take oxygen out. Because the moment you take oxygen out, that is not fire anymore. You can't take oxygen out of a fire. Because fire is a manifestation of oxygen, the wick or the wax here, and temperature. These three causes coming together manifests the fire. From a fire, you can't take out any of those things. Forgive me. You can't take out any of the causes from a fire. So what did I do then? How come the fire stopped? How come the fire was put out? Exactly. I didn't put out a fire. Although you think I put out the fire, I actually didn't put out the fire. I just took out the causes for the next instance of fire. I didn't blow out an existing fire. Once again, how did we light the fire? I held the fire to this, that heated the wax, and then there was oxygen, and once it starts using that oxygen, it converts the carbons here, or it converts the wax here, the hydrocarbons, into the fire. You see the fire there. When I blew it out, your perception of the world told you that I was actually putting out the fire. So there's a fire that's there. See, right now there's a fire. I can't put out this fire. There's not a soul in this world that can put out that fire. I want you to think about why I'm saying this. And start to think about it in terms of cause and effect. There is nothing I can do to put out this fire. But then you'll say, of course, Swami, if you just blow at it, you're going to put out the fire. No. I'm not putting out this fire, am I? Because it is already fire. If it's already fire, then the causes that are existing at this moment are already the fire. I can't put out this fire. Then which fire can I put out? Think and answer. Which fire can I put out? The next fire. Which fire can I put out? If I can't put out this fire, which fire can I put out? Can I put out a fire? Can I put out a fire? I can't put out a fire, ladies and gentlemen. All I can do is remove causes that causes a fire. I can't put out a fire. Let's try again. Here's a fire. This fire is kept lit because of the causes. Causes being so let's call it wax and temperature. Okay? So these are the causes. When you look at this fire, aren't these three causes manifesting that fire? Like, take this moment, let's freeze that moment for a second. Okay, just freeze this moment for a second. Now, in that moment that just passed, there was oxygen, there was wax, and there was temperature. Those three causes kept that fire alive. Now, when I blow at this, can I take out that fire? Can I take out this fire by blowing at this? Why can I not take out this fire? Because if it's already fire, I can't take anything out of it. If it's already fire, I can't take anything out of it. Because if it's fire, it's no longer oxygen. If it's fire, it's no longer wax, it's fire. Ignore temperature for a second. Right? If it's fire, this fire right now, that fire is not oxygen, is it? A fire is the product of oxygen and wax and temperature coming together. Because once it's a product, it's no longer the causes. Therefore, I can't put out this fire. Which fire can I put out then? Which fire? If I can't put out this fire, which fire can I put out?
Yeah.
I cannot, exactly. I cannot put out a fire. But then people talk about putting out
fires.
Because here's what they think. There are existing things in this world and we can change them. People speak in terms of entities. People think that a fire exists here. That is distorted thinking. Deluded perception makes you think that there's a fire here. A fire. And that fire is one that I can put out because it's the fire that I lit. But that is not so. What's happening is each instance of time, if we were able to slow down time and split time into not microseconds, maybe, that's the thing. This is not time bound. This is not happening over time. This is happening because of causes. See, if I were to put out this fire, this particular fire, how much do I have to zoom into time? We can't work in seconds because it's not over a second that this fire burns. Shall we go milliseconds? Femtoseconds? Or microseconds? Even attoseconds? How much do we have to keep zooming into time so that we find a molecule of wax and a molecule of oxygen coming together to form fire? How much can we zoom into time? It would be a meaningless task because by the time we reach a fire, it's no longer oxygen and it's no longer wax. So you can't put out a fire. You can only put out something from becoming fire. Therefore, it's not putting out. By taking out the oxygen, by blowing at this, I can take out the oxygen. When I take out oxygen, ladies and gentlemen, please don't think that it is this fire that I have put out. Because this fire is no longer oxygen for me to take out the oxygen. It's already a fire. Put your hand up if that didn't make sense to you. I'll try and explain that again. Good. I like it when you're honest with me. Thank you. Because then it gives me another chance to help you. That's what I'm here for. Nothing makes me happy. What you see here is a fire. This fire is the product of causes. Wax and oxygen have come together. So this is wax, this is oxygen, right? You tell me when you see a fire. This is obviously metaphorically speaking. So wax, oxygen. What is it now? Wax, oxygen. Now, wax, oxygen. Now, wax and oxygen. What is it now? fire. At this point, you can't talk about wax and you can't speak of oxygen, because it's no longer wax or oxygen. Now it's fire. Once again, wax, oxygen. Let's put it 200 meters apart. Wax, oxygen. 100 meters apart. Wax, oxygen. 50 meters apart. Wax, oxygen. 25 meters apart. Wax, oxygen. 1 millimeter apart. What is it? Wax, oxygen. Right. Now the two of them together. Fire. Not wax and oxygen. Now it's fire. If now it's fire, where's the oxygen to take away from here? You get it? If now this is fire, where's the oxygen here to take out of it? Where's the wax to take out of it? It's no longer wax and oxygen. It's fire. Because when two causes come together, they manifest an entirely different product. It's no longer the causes. But it's sustained by the causes. But it's no longer the causes. So then come back to the candle. Right now you see a fire. If I blow at this, am I blowing out this fire? Because to blow out a fire, what should I take out of it? Causes, right? So the causes are wax and oxygen. But right now, because it is a fire, you no longer have wax and oxygen separately. So if they are no longer separate, how can I take out the wax or the oxygen? Because now it's a fire. So if I blow at this, what am I taking out? The oxygen of this fire. No. I can't take out the oxygen of this fire. I can only take out oxygen. What that prevents is fire from happening in the next instance. I cannot blow out this fire. Can you? Can you blow out this fire? No. So fire cannot be blown out. Don't try. Don't bother. A fire cannot be blown out. All you can do is take out a cause so that a fire does not come into being. See, a fire is manifesting here right now, ladies and gentlemen. Manifestation is a result of causes. If I take out the cause of oxygen, a fire does not manifest in that moment. This is not an existing fire. This is not a prevailing fire. This is not a pre-existing fire. This is nothing more than a fire in this moment. That's why they call it pachupan. Born out of causes in the present. Nothing to do with time. It's got nothing to do with time. Therefore, when I blow this out, please don't tell me that I just blew out the fire that was. I cannot do such thing. Because the fire cannot be blown out. All you can do though is remove the causes so that a fire cannot come into being. And that's what I just did. I didn't put out the fire. So how come there's no fire now? Because now there are no causes for a fire to arise in this moment. So what is fire? Is it something that exists over time? Is fire something that exists over time? No. Then, what is fire? Just the product of causes that are present. Over how long? Over what period? You can't talk about something like that. That's why the Dhamma is akalika, it's timeless. You can't speak of things on the dimension of time, ladies and gentlemen, because there is no such thing called time. But won't you look at this and tell me, Swami, but this was burning for the last minute, last 2 minutes. Time is a creation in your own mind. Because in your mind, you think of entities. An entity is something that exists over time. Existence. That's why I said, for you, the falling economy is a problem. For me, existence is a problem. I'm ashamed that I feel existence when actually there is no such thing called existence. Now, if that is how a fire works, did I just kill the fire, as a gentleman suggested? Did I just kill the fire? Can I kill a fire? Is the fire dead now? Is the fire dead? Was there a fire that was alive to be killed? Was there? No? Then what is death? If you are telling me that I didn't kill the fire, there was no fire that existed to be killed, then what is death? You think of death as something that happens to you who's alive. See? This is a live fire. This is before you were born. This is birth. This is life. And what comes next? Almost. And then we have death. Birth, life, and death. There is no such thing. All there are manifestations of causes in the present. You are alive right now. Right now. You are not alive over a period of time. So when you think, how old are you now? 85? So how long have you been alive? How long has this fire been alive? Right, let's look at the clock. Is there a clock over me? Yes, is there a second hand? Is there? Alright. So you look at the clock and tell me how long this fire has been alive then. One minute? 20 seconds. This fire has been alive for 20 seconds. This fire has been alive for 20 seconds. Huh? This fire? This particular fire has been alive for the last 20 seconds? No. How long has it been alive? You can't talk about how long something's been alive. Because right now it's using oxygen and wax. Right now it's using another bit of oxygen and another bit of wax. Right now, it's using another bit of oxygen and another bit of wax. Therefore, a fire is manifesting in every moment. Because these moments happen consecutively, you look at this, you observe the world through your lens of entities. Yeah? You look at the world through your lens of entities and you say, look at this fire that has existed over the last 5 minutes. Because what you don't see are discrete events. Each moment of fire is a discrete moment of fire. It's discrete. It is not connected to the previous moment. So this is not a fire that has been lit for the last minute, ladies and gentlemen. This is a fire that is now. There's only the now. There's only the now. Now is not a time. What is now? 10:25? No, that is not now. Now is not on the clock. It's not on the face of a watch. Now does not have time. Now does not have hours and minutes and seconds. Now is now. Now is when the causes come together. That's what now is. But as you look at this, you think now the fire has been lit for the last 2 minutes. Because, here's why. Because you look at this and think, that is an existing fire. That's the concept. This is flawed thinking. You think of an existing fire. Now imagine if we took a camera that could take photos at, say 1,000 frames per second. Or say 100 frames per second. I would have 100 photos to show you, wouldn't I? In each photo, you'd see a fire. In each photo, the fire would be the product of causes, wax and oxygen. Would you say that these 100 photos are of the same fire? You think like that. It feels like that. You perceive the world like that. That's why when I remind you of your grandfather or your grandmother, you think your grandmother was alive for the last however many years, last 60 years she's been alive. Because you think that was one grandmother who lived over 65 years. That is not so. All there are manifestations in the present, not time. No such thing called time. Time is only a creation of the mind. How does time come into being? When you think of individual, discrete manifestations and you try to come up with a story to describe that, now you create a dimension of time which is an illusion. In your mind you create this illusion and then you talk about an existing fire that has existed over a period of time. That is why you think you are however many years old. Because in your mind you exist. But you know from our lessons earlier that all you are chitta. You are a series of chittas, just like the fire is a series of oxygen and wax. See, let me draw you one chitta. If this is one chitta, one instance of fire is what? Oxygen plus wax. What about the next instance? Oxygen plus wax. And the next instance? Oxygen plus wax. Each individual instance is an instance of oxygen plus wax. The reason that this fire exists is not because of this. It has no connection to that either. There is no relationship between each of these instances. They're all discrete individual instances. But here's what happens to the ignorant mind. You observe that and you think, oh, this fire has been burning for the last however long. So therefore when we put it out, when I put out this fire, you tell me that it is this fire that I put out. I never put out a fire because I cannot put out a fire. Here's what I do. In this moment, I take out oxygen. There's wax, but I take out oxygen. Because I have taken out oxygen, now there's only wax. Wax alone cannot manifest a fire. Therefore, there's no fire. It's not this fire that I put out. Put your hand up if that didn't make sense. This is time. Right. At t equals 1 or at t equals 0, we present oxygen and wax. Okay? Now that we have presented oxygen and wax, what's going to happen? They're going to manifest fire. That's fire. If I want another moment of fire between 1 and 2, what should I do? Just mind my own business or what? What should I do? I should provide causes. See, this is anicca. I must provide causes. Otherwise, no, nothing will exist. What causes must I provide?
Oxygen.
But I've already provided oxygen. Why should I do it again? It's been consumed, hasn't it? So therefore, I have to provide a new bout of oxygen and a new bit of wax. These two, new, they're new. They're not the same as the ones before. Therefore, you get another moment of fire. Another instance of fire. What does this fire have to do with this fire?
Nothing.
Nothing. Exactly. Nothing. What does this oxygen have to do with this oxygen? Nothing. What does this wax have to do with that wax? Nothing.
And what does this fire have to do with that fire?
Nothing. So what does anything have to do with the one thing, the thing before? Nothing. So what do you have to do with what happened a moment ago? Are you the same person? Are you the same person? Sir?
No longer
manifest
the fire.
We'll come to that. Good question. Do these things have anything to do with each other? No, they're all individual and discrete things. Now you have to ask the question. I have to ask the question, where's the soul? Where is the soul that travels from one life to the other? Who goes to heaven when you die? Who goes to hell when you die? Who goes anywhere? Are you the same person that left home to come here today?
Next, I want fire between 2 and 3. What must I do?
Nothing, right? Because I've already given 2 lots of oxygen. Yeah? I've already provided 2 lots of oxygen and 2 lots of wax. Why should I give anything else? That will be enough for another, won't it? No, what should I do?
I should give another dose of oxygen and another dose of wax.
Because this is an individual and discrete event which has nothing to do with the previous events. Then, here's the next question. Now, I no longer want the fire. Okay? I no longer want the fire. Shall we kill this fire? It's impossible. Well done. Shall we kill this fire? You must understand what I mean by this, because I don't want to continue unless you all get what I exactly mean by this. When I ask you the question, shall I kill this fire, and you tell me it's impossible, do you actually understand what you mean? Is it possible to kill this fire? Is it possible to kill something after it has happened? No. Because it's happened. So what is killing then? What is death? Think about it. What is death? How can you kill something? It's already happened. This has already manifested. A fire has already... How can you take out the oxygen from that fire? Because it's no longer oxygen. It's no longer wax. You can't take the oxygen out of this, because it's already a fire. If you could, you could go and take the oxygen out of the previous one also, and the one before that. You can't do any of those things because it's no longer oxygen, and neither is it wax. Because they no longer manifest as oxygen or wax, now it manifests as fire. So let's try and kill the fire then, shall we? Shall we put out this fire? Is that possible? No. If you don't want fire, what can you do? You don't like this fire. Okay, you don't like this fire. What can you do? What can you do? You don't like this fire. What can you do? There is nothing you can do. There is nothing you can do. If you don't want fire, there's only one thing you can do. Just make sure that either of these two things, at the very least, or both of them, are not present in that next moment. That's all you can do. You cannot kill this fire, because a fire does not exist. Fire is not something that exists. Fire is something that manifests. You can only talk about death when you talk about existence. You think you're going to die because you think you exist. That's why you say, I'm now, 8 years old, maybe I have another 10 more? Because you think, here's what's going to happen. Right? So this is you. This is what you think. Here's how you see a fire. Here's how the Buddha sees a fire. You see the red line?
See.
A fire. Therefore you see an entity. A fixed thing. Existence. Now you can tell me that the fire lasted over 7 seconds. It's not entirely appropriate for me to actually even put this on a timeline. Because then you'd be asking me, well, if it lasted over 7 seconds, did it actually last over 1 second, Swami Mahansa? You could ask me that question. So you're saying, okay, Swami, so it doesn't last over 7 seconds, but it lasts over one, right? If you took one of these and expanded that, now what do you have? The same thing again. Right, let's take one of them. So now I'm going to take, these are seconds, right? These are seconds. I'm going to take one of these. Take this one. And I'm going to zoom in. Now what do I have? This is one of these. And then you say these are milliseconds. Okay? So here's what you see. What's really going on? This. In each of these milliseconds, what's happening? Oxygen and wax. Oxygen and wax. Oxygen and wax. So can you kill this fire once it's born? Can you? No. How long does this fire last? In your mind, you're thinking 1 millisecond, because that's what I just drew on the board. Alright, so let's. What? Here's what we'll do next. Huh? Let's take one of these. Let's take one of these. And expand that. Let's zoom in and expand that. Now you don't have milliseconds, now you have microseconds. And here's what you see now. No matter how much we zoom in, you're still thinking in terms of entities that exist over a period of time. That's why scientists keep on trying to find the indivisible particle. Because they think things exist. They think things exist. But if these are microseconds, what's going on here? Once again, you have oxygen and wax. So can you... What can you kill? A fire over a second, over a millisecond, over a microsecond? Which fire can you kill? You can't kill a fire. You can't kill a fire because a fire has nothing that you can kill. You can't take away anything from a fire. But then, isn't fire oxygen and wax? So can't you just take away the oxygen and stop the fire? Can't you? You can't, why not? Because by the time it's fire, it's no longer oxygen and neither is it wax. It's something entirely different. Therefore, from a fire you can't take out oxygen and you can't take out wax. Because a fire is not oxygen and wax. It's something entirely different. It's a different manifestation. So, if you want to stop the fire, there's only one thing you can do. What is that? You can't stop a fire. There's only one thing you can do if you don't want a fire. Is avoid oxygen and wax, which are the causes of a fire, from coming out in the next moment. In this moment, if you stop oxygen and wax coming together, now you no longer have a fire. Does that make sense to everyone? Put your hand up if that didn't make sense. That didn't make sense. Once again, just give me a show of hands if that didn't make sense. Makes sense. Makes sense to everyone? Okay. Now, we had a question from a good gentleman. What happens when you put out the fire? Was that what you asked, sir?
What happens when the chitta doesn't manifest?
Okay, when the chitta doesn't manifest. What happens when the fire doesn't manifest? Why doesn't a fire manifest? Like here, do you see a fire? No. Why does it not manifest? Because there are no causes. There is wax. There is oxygen. But the required temperature is not here. So therefore, you don't have a fire. When a fire doesn't manifest, where is the fire that doesn't manifest? Here. Here you have a fire. Here you don't have a fire. Where is that fire that is not here? You're going to throw something at me now, aren't you? Where is the fire that is not here? Exactly. It does not exist because it does not manifest because the causes are there. So, if the fire were somewhere that is supposed to be here but it's not here, right, then you'd have to see it running all the way here the moment you bring the lighter up here. Right? Then, see, I'm going to light this now. Do you see a fire coming from somewhere? You just keep your eyes out, right? We don't know where it might come from. Right? Because if it does, just watch out. Right? Otherwise, your hair might catch fire. Right? So watch out. As I go to light this, it will come from somewhere. Will it? No. Why not? Because fire doesn't come from anywhere. It doesn't go anywhere. So when I blow this out, if I can, where did that fire go? Where did it go? It didn't go anywhere. Because it didn't come from anywhere to go anywhere. Oxygen and wax together manifested something different. Now we've taken out one of the causes. That manifestation can no longer happen. That's all. Nothing came from anywhere and nothing goes anywhere. So where did you all come from? Oh, heaven. Where are you all going? Where do they all come from? Where do they all go? Nothing comes, nothing goes. All there are manifestations. That is what aniccha is. But when you don't understand the concept of aniccha, you feel that you exist. Therefore, you talk about where you've come from and where you've gone, what you're going to be doing tomorrow. See, a fire, you now understand that a fire, you can't talk about what's going to happen to this fire in the next moment. Right? What's going to happen to this fire in the next moment? At t equals 2, you have a fire. What's going to happen to that fire at t equals 3? Tell me. What's going to happen to the fire at t equals 2 at t equals 3? What's going to happen to that fire? What's going to happen to that fire? Nothing's going to happen to that fire because that fire won't manifest at t equals 3. Because the oxygen and the wax that was consumed to burn that fire, to create that fire, is no longer exists. Because it is what became the fire. So fire is not an entity that exists. Fire is not a magical thing, it's just a manifestation. It's not a, I don't know, it's only a manifestation. So where there are no causes, there is no effect. This is what the Buddha tried to explain to us when he explained the concept of cause and effect. All there are effects, not things that prevail over time. See, now when people talk about impermanence, you tell me what sense that makes. See, when people talk about impermanence, here's what they say. This fire, it won't last forever. What fire? This fire that you light at this second, it won't last forever. Which fire? Which fire won't last forever? What are you talking about? What's impermanent? See, that's what people say. People say things are not permanent because everything's impermanent. Because they're talking about entities. When people talk about entities, they're talking about a fire that is not permanent. See, yeah, see, it dies. See, it dies, see. Therefore, the fire is not permanent. It's impermanent. That is not what the Buddha taught us. He doesn't talk about a fire that exists to be impermanent someday in the future. There is no such thing that can last over a period of time to be impermanent. So permanence and impermanence is not what we need to understand when we talk about Buddhist philosophy. The concept is anicca, not anithya. What anicca means is every time you see a fire, that is merely a manifestation of the causes that are present in that moment. It's always in that moment. There is not a previous moment or a past moment. Because again, previous and past talks about time. See, when this fire was lit, what had happened to this fire? Did it go somewhere? Was this fire in the coming? Was it coming from somewhere? No, because when this fire existed, all that existed in this world, wasn't it? What had happened to this fire? You can't talk about what happened to that fire, because that fire was fire, that's it. Did it burn out? No. What can burn out? When it's fire, it's fire. When there are no longer causes, it's no longer fire. That's it. So you tell me, what do you think about impermanence? Is the fire permanent or impermanent? So shall we spend the rest of our lives trying to understand that a fire is not permanent? Shall we go and meditate on impermanence? Impermanence of what? Exactly. What is there to be impermanent? That is my question. The Buddha's teaching is, it's not entities that exist to be permanent or impermanent, so therefore that is besides the question. It's not a relevant question whether something is permanent or impermanent. The Buddha's teaching is, all things are manifestations. They only manifest while there are causes. Cause and effect has nothing to do with impermanence. So the gentleman asks, what happens to the chittas? Just like I ask you the question, what happened to the fire? When the causes didn't exist, when the causes don't exist, is it the fire that got burnt out? Or was it just that a new instance of fire never arose? That's what happened, right? Not the fire that burnt out. A new instance of fire never came into being. Therefore, when you no longer have causes for chittas to arise, chittas don't arise. It's not an existing chitta that goes into Nibbana. So you have no hope of going to Nibbana. You're wasting your time here. You are not going to walk into Nibbana. No chariot is going to come to get you and carry you across to Nibbana. No ferry is going to come to ferry you across to Nibbana. Remember, you cannot get to Nibbana. Nibbana or Paranibbana is where a chitta doesn't arise. See, this is Nibbana. As far as the fire is concerned, this, ladies and gentlemen, is Nibbana. Why do I say that? No causes for a fire. This is also Nibbana. But because you remember that there was a fire here, you struggle to think of this as Nibbana. You think, this is Nibbana, I get that. But here, the fire died, right? No, no fire died. There's no fire now. There's no fire now. Therefore, these two things are identical. Does what exist while you're existing?
Existence,
oh, you mean now?
Existence is because of causes.
Yeah.
Existence manifests when there is no causes, that is Paranibbana.
Yeah.
So, does existence have to happen for other things to exist?
Does existence have to happen for other things to exist?
No, because we perceive everything. Right?
Oh, yes. We perceive, everything is a perception at the end of the day, right? Because when we talk about chittas, you and I know that the world exists because of our perception, our power to perceive. But even if perception didn't happen, things would still exist. I mean, things would be there. So here, you've got to be careful when I use the word exist. I mean it in two different senses. There's one existence which is a product of ignorance. Like this existence. That there was a fire that existed over time.
Entity existence,
yes. But even if there wasn't minds, even if chittas didn't exist, still objects would exist. Patavi, Apo, Tejo, Vaya, and so on. Things would exist. So this glass, this candle, it would be there even if there was no one in this room to perceive the candle. The concept of candle wouldn't be there because that's a word that we have in our minds. We wouldn't have a label, a name for a candle, but a rupa would still be there. No nama would be there. Name wouldn't be there, but form would be there. Right? So what is Parinibbana? Parinibbana, in relation to a fire, Parinibbana is where there are no causes for a fire. Okay? Parinibbana, in relation to a fire, is where there are no causes for a fire. So what is Parinibbana for you then? Parinibbana for you is where there are no causes for a chitta to arise. That is Parinibbana. So you see, in that way, this pen has also attained Parinibbana. Why? Because there are no causes for chitta to arise.
And Aravat says causes could have caused that pen as well, right?
And Aravat says?
And Aravat's causes, since he manifested, part of his causes could be in that pen.
Yes. Let's not go there today. Right? Yes, but let's not go there for today. What was I saying? Ah, yeah, pen. So, this pen, as far as chittas are concerned, I mean, as far as fire is concerned, has this pen not arisen in Parinibbana? Where's the fire now? No causes for a fire. So as far as fire is concerned, this candle has attained Parinibbana. Because when we talk about Parinibbana, I'm trying to get you to understand the concept of Parinibbana in relation to something. Extinguishing. The fire is extinguished. Really, when we talk about a fire having been extinguished, you can't really talk about a fire being extinguished. All you can say is there are no causes for a fire. We never put out a fire, did we? Because a fire cannot be put out. You can only make sure, you can only prevent the causes for a fire being there, being somewhere. If that is what extinguishing is, then the fire is extinguished. Meaning, as far as the fire is concerned, this candle has attained Parinibbana. So has this pen. As far as fire is concerned, this pen has attained Parinibbana. But it would be silly to use the word Parinibbana for such things. Because Parinibbana is the term that the Buddha gave us when he talks about there being no causes for a chitta to arise. Which is true for this pen as well. No chittas arise here. But no chittas ever arose here. But these bodies that you are, this is one body. You are also bodies. In those bodies, chittas do arise. Because there are causes for chittas to arise. Nibbana and Parinibbana, the difference between these two, Nibbana is where the causes for suffering cease to exist. But chittas still arise. Okay? The causes for suffering cease to exist, but chittas still arise. Parinibbana is where the causes for chittas themselves cease to exist. Therefore, chittas don't arise. Which one do you need to worry about? Nibbana or Parinibbana? Let's just be concerned with Nibbana. Once Nibbana has been sorted, Parinibbana will automatically happen for you. Parinibbana cannot happen until you attain Nibbana. And here's why. For as long as a chitta seeks something, for as long as your minds seek something, seek what? Happiness. For as long as your minds seek happiness, it will have to arise. Therefore, Parinibbana is out the door. You can't talk about Parinibbana for as long as your minds seek something, because the mind has to be there to seek. And Nibbana, or suffering, is the mind's quest. The mind's quest for happiness. The mind going into vexation and therefore looking for relief from that vexation is what you do. Is what your chittas do. So the moment the chitta stops looking for happiness, having realized that happiness is not something that comes from the outside world, and therefore it gives up that quest to achieve happiness from the outside world, now the chittas simply keep arising and passing away in these bodies in which they did right from the start, until these bodies are intact. Once the day comes that these bodies can no longer sustain themselves and the bodies decompose, at that point the chittas don't arise again. That is Parinibbana. So you need not worry about Parinibbana. Let me deal with that. I'll sort that one out for you. You sort out Nibbana for yourselves. What I wanted to explain to you with this activity today, this practical exercise today, was to help you to understand who you are really. In understanding what a fire is, you can now apply the same concept, the same principles, the same theory, the same logic to yourselves. This is a metaphorical fire. You are the real one. See? You are this fire. Now these are chittas, but that is Parinibbana. When this ceases, that is Parinibbana. But here's the other thing. On top of these chittas, we have something else going on. And that is suffering. On top of these chittas, there's something else going on that is suffering. Suffering is a product of ignorance and attachment. Just like when we drew the fire, and each instance of fire is an instance of oxygen and wax, each instance of suffering is a product of ignorance and attachment on a bed of chittas. Without a chitta, you can't have suffering, because it's a chitta that suffers. It's like you can't have a cancer without a substrate. You need a body to have a cancer. You can't have mold that does without a surface, right? It's the surface that goes moldy. In the same way, the chittas that you are the bed on which suffering begins to manifest, not create, not exist, manifest, for as long as there are causes for it. And what are those causes? Ignorance. Ignorance of what? What I have just explained to you. Ignorance of that. Ignorance of what I have just explained to you is what causes suffering. So what have I just done? What have I just done? I have given you a path out of ignorance so that you no longer, not you no longer, suffering no longer needs to manifest on the bed of chittas. Once wisdom reaches your mind, once wisdom arises in your mind, once you begin to see the world as it really is, chittas will remain, suffering will cease. That is Nibbana for you. That's why we say at our monastery, exclusively for aspirants of Nibbana. That's what we do. That's what everything we do is for. Everything we do for that. We just want Nibbana. Why do we want Nibbana so badly? What does everyone want? That's what people do, but what do they really want? Why do people have money? They want Nibbana, that's why. Why do people eat? They want Nibbana. Nibbana in the sense? Freedom from suffering. But they don't understand that doing those things will never get them to Nibbana. Because they think happiness and pleasure are the same thing. That is their ignorance. Happiness and pleasure are not the same thing. Happiness is Nibbana. Pleasure is simply temporary relief from vexations. These two things are worlds apart. You can't even talk about the two of those things in the same sentence unless you were to say happiness is not pleasure. Those two things are not the same thing. It's like the sky above and the earth below. That's how different these two things are. Therefore, when you experience pleasure, ladies and gentlemen, don't fall to the trap. Don't fool yourself to think that that is happiness. It is not. It is not happiness. Don't settle yourself for pleasure. Don't settle down for pleasure. That's why I often ask you to fall out of love with pleasure, because pleasure is not the best thing. It's just so overrated. People don't understand what true happiness is, and therefore they keep falling behind pleasure. They become victims of it. They start begging for pleasure. And that's why people try to please their five senses. Through eyes, ears, nose, tongue and the bodies, they seek pleasures, not happiness. Happiness cannot be provided to you through your eyes, ears, nose, tongue and your body. Because it is in the chitta when suffering ceases. That's it. See, now that you understand this, okay, who should you go looking for happiness? You go to the devalaya? What can the gods give you now? What can the Kapumahatya give you? Can your wife give you happiness? If you have just understood what I have explained to you, then happiness is simply where suffering ceases to exist in the mind, and suffering is a manifestation of ignorance and attachment, can your wife give you happiness? Then why do you still keep her at home? Can your husband give you happiness? Then why do you still keep him at home? Send him to the monastery. Can your children give you happiness? Come on, parents. You know where I'm going with this. Can your children give you happiness? Then why do you still keep them at home? You brought them into this world because you wanted them, because you thought, once I become a mother, I can be very happy. Once I become a father, I can be very happy. And so you brought them into this world. You thought your children were going to give you happiness. But they can't give you happiness, because happiness is not something that someone can give you. Happiness happens when you stop creating suffering in your mind. That's why they say happiness is something that is to be found within you. The only thing you can expect to achieve from having things around you is pleasure. But pleasure is not happiness. It's merely relief from vexation. And you know there's nothing good about pleasure, because for pleasure to be there, pain has to be there. No pain, no gain. So it's meaningless to go after pleasure. Therefore, the only thing that's worth fighting for is happiness, unconditional happiness. Therefore, nothing that you have around you today can give you happiness. That's why I told you earlier, I'm not here to please you, because you don't have what I want. Now, do you understand that I was not just being uppity about it, or being snobbish, or just being, you know, just trying to insult you by saying something like that? I literally meant it. You don't have what I want. Just like I don't have what you want. For both of us, we have to discover within ourselves what we want. It's not something that you can give me or something that I can give you. See, this is to empower you. You are the master of your own salvation. That's why I asked you right at the beginning of this talk, are you doing enough to work towards your salvation? If you're spending your life trying to surround yourselves with material possessions, trying to keep yourselves busy, trying to educate yourselves, trying to earn money, trying to do this, trying to do that, trying to do the other, none of those things are actually going to give you happiness, because happiness cannot be found that way. Ekayana bhikkhave maggo sattvanam visuddhiya. There's only one path to freedom. Soka pariddhavanam samatikkamaya. There's only one path to freeing the mind of fear and grief. Dukkha domanasanam attangamaya. There's only one path to freeing oneself from lamentation. Nyayasa adhigamaya, to achieve higher states of wisdom. Nibbanasa satchakiriyaya, see, Nibbana, to achieve Nibbana. Yadidam chattaro satipattam. This is the form satipattam. Contemplation, right contemplation. For right contemplation to happen, you need to be in right association. Because once you are in right association, when you are in noble association, they will constantly keep reminding you, encouraging you, teaching you, guiding you, supporting you to practice right contemplation. That's what I achieve. I am able to get today. This is what I am privileged to have today because I am surrounded by noble association. That is why I came into robes. Because Nibbana is now within my reach. That when you live a lay life, it becomes incredibly difficult. I'm not going to say it's impossible, because that would be wrong. But it becomes incredibly difficult. How do I know? I was there. So once again, I will end with what I started. Unless you are bound by duties and responsibilities, from which you see no exit. But don't just give up. Keep looking for an exit. Unless you are bound by duties and responsibilities which keep you bound to your lay lives, please remember that all those paths are merely roads that lead to a dead end. You will all end up in a coffin. And at that point, nothing you will have done will have mattered, because this is the only thing that matters. What you do to work towards your salvation. All other things are simply a means to an end. Every day, every week, every month, every year, keep asking yourself, is there still any more, are there still more valid reasons why I'm still in a lay life? Keep asking these questions from yourselves. I'm not asking you to come into robes just because it's fun, no, you know, like you can just wear robes and go on Peter Path and do all this and that. That's not why. It's because that's where you will get noble association. That's why. It's because of that, noble association. That's it. If you can have noble association at home, then stay at home. Who's going to give you noble association at home? You know the answer. I care about you folks because I don't care what's in your pocket. You have nothing to give me that can make me happy. Therefore, I can be bluntly honest with you. Therefore, I don't have to be scared. I don't have to be afraid. Because I'll fight your side. When everyone else says you're nice, you're wonderful, you're lovely, even when they see faults with you and flaws with you, people still keep silent. Sometimes people won't tell you that your backside is torn, because if you feel that they have offended you, you may not help them. Therefore, your trousers are torn, but people won't say anything. Your zipper is open, but people won't say anything. Your trousers have fallen to your knees, but people won't say anything, because they want to get something out of you. But I don't have anything to get from you, because I realize that nothing can make me happy from the outside. Happiness only happens within me. Therefore, I can speak my mind to you. And thankfully, I can do that. Because therefore, you get to understand the truth of everything as it really is. And hopefully, these words will make an impact. These words will help you to think differently. If not today, tomorrow, at least next week, next month, next year, this year. 5 years, 10 years, 20 years. Hopefully before your last year. I care deeply. I also do. You're human beings. You're not someone's tissue paper. Just to be used and thrown in the trash. You're not a tissue paper. You know you're too busy to care about your dead parents now. You're too busy for that. Not because you don't love them, you don't care about them, you're just too busy for that. What about your grandparents? Who looks after them? What's happened to them? Who knows? Once a year you may give something in their memory. Is that all they need? Once a year? Is once a year how often they looked after you? Once a year? You can't be faulted for that because you're too busy. Yes, because life is busy. Life has to carry on, move on. But what about the dead person? Who cares about them? That's why I keep reminding you, do what you have to do for your salvation before your time is up. Because no one else is going to look after you because they are too busy looking after their own needs and wants. They don't have the time, they don't have the time of day to give you. They just don't have it. I have it because I have nothing better to do. This is the best thing to be doing in the world. To help people to attain to their salvation. That's why this is the best job in the world. You've not tried the best job in the world until you come here. So don't tell me you love your jobs and this is the best job in the world. You've not tried this, have you? There's nothing better than this. Because you can speak your mind freely. And you can actually say what you do. When a customer comes up to you and you're running a business, can you tell them exactly what you think about them? No, you can't. You have to put on a mask. No matter what your line of work is, you always have to put on a mask. Because the business is there to make money. So when a customer walks into the door, you can say, how much money are you going to spend here today, sir? They'll walk out the door. I know, these words are not for everyone though. That I understand. It's not for everyone. It's not for people who want to continue living in this world. It's for people who want to seek their salvation and get the heck out of this place while they still can. If that's what you want, I can help. If that's not what you want, maybe get another monk. All Swami Mohan says, I'm sure, will want to talk to you about the same thing. I'm sure of that. But for some reason, I feel more liberal to express myself in this way. Because I have experienced what you've experienced. I've gone through all that. I've enjoyed life in the way that you enjoy life today. I've earned my money. I earned the property. I got married. I went through the good life, so-called good life that you're talking about. So I know what it's like. Maybe some Swami Mohans haven't had that experience. Therefore, I know that these are all dead ends. All of them are dead ends. The only thing that I didn't experience was having children. But then I saw enough people having children and have experienced what life is like for them. But that was one vipaka that had to happen. So now at the monastery we have all of your children. And you are free from them. How did that work out? 175 of them. So that was one vipaka I couldn't get out of. Well, I have a short video clip to show you. This is the service that two of our monks are doing in Australia. Last week I showed you them going on Pindapada. But just in case you thought that's all they did, going on Pindapada and eating food, they have sent me a short video clip that shows the great service that they have been doing over there for the last few months. And as you watch it, I want you to rejoice in all that they've done. They may have the Dhamma, but it is you who has made it possible by providing the requisites, by providing the means, by making it, by creating a comfortable environment for them to practice the path. Maybe by constructing a kuti, maybe by creating the Dhamma hall, maybe by putting a fan, maybe by switching the light on. That's what you have done. And besides, these are your children that you have given to the Swami Dasasa. If not in this birth, then certainly in a previous life. We are all connected. Sometimes we don't see those connections, but those connections are still there nonetheless. So as you watch this, I want you to rejoice in it and also to be happy for those who are now benefiting because our monks are there. Because they are also human beings, just like you and I. Just because they are in another part of the world, they are in a developed country, a first world country maybe, but they still suffer because of ignorance and attachment. Money does not bring people happiness. But as long as raga, dvesha and moha are in people's minds, nothing can make them happy. Therefore, we go give them freedom from raga, dvesha and moha. And let's watch the video. Thank you.
That's our life. That's how we spend our lives. That's how we plan on spending the rest of our lives.
Helping people find their freedom. Freedom from drugs, freedom from alcohol, freedom from food, freedom from sex addictions, freedom from porn addictions, freedom from smoking, freedom from TV, freedom from computer games, freedom from everything. Freedom from sight, from sound, from smell, from taste, from touch. Freedom. Nirvana. Oh, I'm so glad how I've been able to live the last 7 years of my life and how I envisage the remainder of my life will turn out. Today I can truly say that my life, the success of my life is counted by the number of hearts that I'm able to help heal. My success can no longer be counted by the amount of money I have in my bank account because I don't have a penny. This is all I have. My roots and my arms full. I have no friends, but the whole world is my home. I have no family, but the whole world is my family. So therefore I don't love anyone, because I love everyone. I love you all just as I love the stranger on the street. I don't need to know who they are. I don't need to know their names. I don't need to know what they can give me, what they can offer me. That's why we go with an arms full to every house, whether they have or they don't. Some people turn us away, say, "Go, go, we don't have anything to give you. Okay, I'll come tomorrow." Just in case you do. This is what we do. This is the noble life, the holy life. A life of unconditional happiness. This is the life that I want you all to experience, because you're also human beings just as much as I am. Nick, did you see the smile on those Swaminathan's faces? Who are they helping? Their brothers and sisters? Their friends? They've never met them before, but does it matter? Just look at the number of venues that they had to travel to. Catching a flight is no easy task. Being sometimes, you know, those flights take many hours. And Australia is no small country. Just to get from one place to the other is a lot of hassle. You can't just drive, get in the car and drive. You've got to catch a flight, you've got to train, and this, that and the other. But they do it without batting a second eyelid. They are okay with that. Because that's what they're here for. They enjoy doing that. So I invite all of you, ladies and gentlemen, to be as close as you can to this action. This is where fun is. This is the real deal. If you want fun, come have fun. Here's where fun is. Here's where happiness is. Here's where joy is. Life is jolly good where I live. Whatever fun you're having right now is nothing in comparison to the fun that I'm having right now. And I don't have a TV. I don't have pizza. I don't have chocolate. I don't have ice cream. Because I don't need fun from them. I have fun within me. So, please rejoice in what Bakulahamdra and Mahindahamdra have been able to achieve in Australia. And you saw the itinerary on screen. It will also be on online. So if you still have friends, families over there who have not met them yet, they'll be there till August, after which time they'll have to come back to Sri Lanka to observe the rains retreat. Talking about rains retreat, so from next week we're observing the rains retreat at the monastery. So there's a customary tradition of inviting the monks to observe rains retreat, as you may know. So you're all welcome. There'll be a small ceremony or an event at the monastery next Saturday. If you're available, you're all welcome. You will be inviting 93 monks, high ordained bhikkhus at our monastery, two of them monastery in Australia. They will be joining us middle of August. But you can invite 93 of our monks to observe the rains retreat, which is something that the Buddha wanted all of his high ordained monks to do. There's a long story behind that. Another day I'll explain to you what the story is. But in those 3 months, what monks are expected to do is to remain stationary and not go traveling. They're there. And focus on their spiritual practice. That's what we do in those three months. Well, for us, it's no different. That's what we do all throughout the year. But those days, long time ago, monks could not always be stationary. They had to go traveling. But during the rains retreat, they'd stay in one place and observe the rains period. But it is said that there's a lot of merits that one can earn during the rains retreat period by inviting the Swaminarayans to be resident in one place. And then what people typically used to do back then was to provide for the monks so that they could focus on their practice. They didn't have to go on alms round. They didn't have to go looking for robes or this, that or the other. Devotees would focus their efforts on helping the monks to be resident in one place and focus on their practice. So therefore, out of that, a lot of people earn lots of merits. And it's at the end of the rains retreat, you also get an opportunity to offer the what they call the cutting room. That marks the end of the rains retreat. So next week you'll be observing the rains retreat at the monastery. Should you wish to invite the Swaminarayan to make that observation, you're welcome. That will be on Saturday, and we expect the program will start around 5 p.m. But before that, you have Guru Swaminarayan's sermon. We expect him to be back by next Saturday. So you can come and join that as well. Thanks. Let's start off with that. Let's take a moment to transfer the merits that we have all acquired to all those who rely on those merits to have them attain the bliss of Nirvana. So first and foremost then, let us take a moment to transfer all the merits that we have acquired by making offerings to the Noble Triple Gem, inviting the Swaminarayans to deliver the sermon, delivering the sermon, listening to the sermon, and as well as creating a conducive environment for all to come along, sit down, and practice the Dhamma comfortably. Let us take a moment to transfer all these merits to the bhikkhus and bhikkhunis, upasakas and upasikas who have since time immemorial protected and preserved the sublime teachings of the Buddha and passed it down through the generations of the noble lineage in the form of the Tripitaka, which is thankfully available to us today to study, understand and comprehend the Dhamma. Let us take a moment to transfer these merits to all monks resident throughout the world, including the monks and nuns resident in your local temples and nunneries who have always been by your side through thick and thin, come rain or shine. Let us also transfer these merits to my teacher, Guru Swami Mahansay, as well as all the monks resident at the monastery and the Anagarikas and Anagarika communities attached to the monastery. Let us also take a moment to transfer these merits to those who make great efforts to disseminate the teachings of the Buddha, be that by transliterating these talks, share them out with others, or inviting others to join them. May they all rejoice in these merits. Let us also transfer these merits to friends of the monastery, our devotees, who for the sake of merits to help them attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana, continue to sustain the Mahasangha. This includes everyone from those of you who provide the Mahasangha with shelter, arms, robes, and medicines, as well as those who pass on their know-how and continue to extend their well wishes. May they all rejoice in these merits, and by the power of these merits, may they be healed of any physical and mental ailments and overcome any obstacles to their spiritual progress. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nirvana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer these merits to our mothers and fathers, brothers and sisters, sons and daughters, grandparents, uncles, aunts, cousins, nephews and nieces, our friends and our acquaintances, our employers and our employees and our teachers, as well as anyone and everyone who helped us, supported us and assisted us in any way, shape and form possible and available to them. May by the power of these merits, they also be freed from any physical and mental ailments and overcome any obstacles to their spiritual progress. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer these merits to the devas and brahmanas, spirits and demons, primarily the Sakadeva, as well as all the numerous gods and deities who have protected and preserved the sum of the sasana.
Let us also transfer this message to our guardian deities to keep a watchful eye over us and keep us out of harm's way. May they prosper in divine power and wisdom. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhana, sadhana, sadhana. Let us also take a moment to transfer these merits to those who have passed away in our name, our loved ones, our forefathers and our ancestors, reminding ourselves that it is in their blood, sweat and tears today we are able to enjoy the comforts of life as we do, reminding ourselves of the great sacrifices that they have made on our behalf, including members of the armed forces, such as the police force, who sacrificed their lives to protect the peace and harmony of our nation, as well as those who lost their lives in the wars, be they friend or foe. May they all rejoice in these merits. Let us also transfer these merits to those who lost their lives in natural disasters, such as the tsunamis and earthquakes, landslides, fires, floods, pandemics, and so on, reminding ourselves that in this infinite long journey of samsara, they will all have been mothers and fathers to us, brothers and sisters to us, friends to us. They will have helped us, supported us, and assisted us in any way, shape, and form possible and available to them. Therefore, with an immense sense of gratitude and compassion towards all of them, let us transfer all the merits we have acquired to all of them. May, by the power of these merits, if any of them have been born in the woeful plane, they redeem themselves and be born in the blissful plane. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. And finally, may by the power and blessings of all the merits we have acquired throughout the day, we will be witness the advent of many hundreds of thousands of arahants in this blessed land. And may you and I, and everyone who has helped make this program a success, become arahat and mahanse, or an arahat and mahanse, in this very life itself, and the era of the Gautama Supreme Buddha itself. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. May the blessings of the Noble Tripitaka be with you all. The members of the Mahasangha will now transfer their blessings to you.
Raga gindin vidva, desha gindin vidva, moha gindin vidva, nibbana parama sukhaya. Sukhita Tarahatma Nibbana Parama Sukhaya Sukhita Tarahatma Mamadasya Nuroka Siyaro Satnusayo Nibbana Parama Sukhaya Sukhita Tarahatma Nibbana Parama Sukhaya Sukhita Tarahatma Nibbana Parama Sukhaya Sukhita Tarahatma Raga gindi meva, desha gindi meva, moha gindi meva, nivansata meva, nivansata Sadhu, sadhu.